Hello everyone, welcome. Today is May the 19th, 2021, and you are at the Whole Life Healing Call where Dr. Alex Lloyd will often give the opportunity for you to be able to interact with him regarding his posts on YouTube, which this week was Deep Waters, was Worth and Value, and the New Jesus. So this is the time when we would usually interact with Alex. However, I just got a message from him. I wanted to explain that he's not going to be here today due to the fact that two of their dear friends died in the last week. And so he's trying to be of service to the families, and one of the families needs him right now. So he was heading out to do that just before, just a few minutes ago. So he gave me the option of what to do today, and I'd like to go ahead and play a replay of one of his calls he did back in 2018. But before we do this, I'm going to share this disclaimer. This presentation is for education and informational purposes only, and since we're going to be talking about issues of health and well-being, we wanted to make sure that you understand this information is not intended to heal or cure anything. Everything in the presentation are the opinions of Dr. Alex Lloyd and myself, Johanna Chan, as your weekly practitioner of the custom codes or the custom trilogies. You should always check with a licensed healthcare provider about any specific health concerns you may have. All right, so having said that, I'm going to play this one of the calls that Alex did that would really be helpful to hear today, and then also please go to YouTube and watch the video on worth and value, and also the video on the anatomy of love. But enjoy this when I play this one from 2018. It's called How to Live in the Moment.
Welcome, everyone. Wherever you are, whenever you're listening, we are so honored by your presence. We want to give you a little something to think about, a little something to apply to your life to make it a little bit better, and something to challenge you, sort of wrestle with for the week, but something to wrestle with that maybe could be a turning point in your life. So let us know how we're doing with that, okay? Because we listen to those comments, and we've changed this thing a lot based on that. Yeah, the spiritual law for today, focus on the moment. And this is nothing new, okay? There's been lots of books out in the last 20, 30 years especially, a number of bestsellers on live in the present moment. Don't live in the past. Don't live in the future. Live in the now, okay? The problem is, even though that's a best-selling book, most people can't do it, and they don't know how to do it, and they don't know why they're not living in the present, okay? My wife, Hope, is a prime example of that. She lived those 12 years she was depressed totally in the past over painful things that had happened to her that really stole her now. It stole her present moment. She was a prisoner of her past, which is pretty normal considering some of the things that she went through. Me, on the other hand, I was more a prisoner of the future. I was always thinking about what can I go do that'll be fun? What can I go do that'll be exciting? I'm bored. What are we doing tomorrow? What are we doing this weekend? Okay, so opposites do attract, and Hope and I are opposites in so many ways, and this is another one, okay? She was living in the past. The past was stealing her present, her now. I was a prisoner of the future. The future was stealing my now, okay? The only place you can be happy, truly happy, the only place you can be at peace, the only place you can have joy, the only place you can be content is in the present, okay? You cannot be happy today for yesterday. Now, you can be happy that something happened yesterday, but that's probably not going to make your present happy, at least not for long. And that's the thing that I've talked about over and over and over through the years, is we have these goals that are wrong goals because they produce stress, which is at the root of almost every problem that we have. And as soon as we have that goal, which Dr. Dan Gilbert at Harvard called an expectation, okay, it steals our present. Now we're in the future instead of now. And now is the only time you can be truly at happy and at peace. Now is the only time you can do anything. Let me prove it to you. Go to McDonald's yesterday. Okay, you ever thought about that? Good luck with that. Go to McDonald's tomorrow, but now. Good luck with that. Well, that's a little bit facetious. Obviously, that's ridiculous. You can't go to McDonald's now for tomorrow. You can't go to McDonald's yesterday, now. The only time you can go to McDonald's or go plant your garden or go to class or go to a movie or go to work or go hug somebody that you love is now. You have never done anything in your life yesterday or tomorrow. Everything you have ever done at the time you did it was now. The problem is the past and the future keep us from doing the best we can do now. They steal our peace now. They steal our joy now. All right? So if you have to live in the present, if you have to live in the now, and like Hope and I when we were younger, you try, but you just can't seem to do that. Why? What is causing that? Let's explore that for just a couple of minutes here. We come pre-programmed to focus on the moment. All right? It's innate. We don't have to try. We don't have to read a book. We're programmed that way when we're a month old, when we're a year old, 5 years old. It comes with all of us. It's the software that comes with all of us, is to live in the present, to live in the now. That's why it's so hard to break habits and addictions. Think about it. Think about some habit or addiction that you've had in the past. I'll give you my big one, all right? I've been addicted to pepper at different periods of my life for extended periods of time, okay? And it's not because of the Dr. Pepper. It's because some of the best memories I have in my life with my father were on hot summer days sharing a Dr. Pepper together, talking, laughing, et cetera. Roy Williams, the coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, has a great big thing of Coca-Cola in his office at the University of North Carolina. And I saw a special they did on him, and it really resonated with me because he said the same thing. He said, I drink a Coke every day, and it is in honor and tribute and remembrance of my dad because of times that we had together, okay? And that's the deal with me and Dr. Pepper. But still, I've been addicted to Dr. Pepper at different times of my life, and there have been a number of those times that I would like to quit drinking Dr. Pepper for health reasons. Not a health problem, but just I know it's not healthy. Okay? Well, was that easy for me to do? Was it easy for me to say, tomorrow I'm not going to have Dr. Pepper. I'm going to get off of Dr. Pepper tomorrow. Yeah, that was really easy. That was easy as pie. I've done that thousands of times, not just about Dr. Pepper, but a whole bunch of other stuff. All right? Was it easy for me when tomorrow came to say, I'm quitting Dr. Pepper today? Ah, there's the rub. No. It's hard. It's really hard. It sometimes feels like it's impossible. And it's not just stuff that you want to quit. It's stuff that you want to do that you haven't been able to get yourself to do. For a really brief period of time, like a month out of when I was in college, I started selling insurance. Okay, got my insurance license, and this guy had convinced me that I was going to be helping people, and this was the best policy in the world, and I was going to make a lot of money too, and all that sort of thing. You know, all those silly things we believe when we're young, and I believed it and did it. And one of the things they told me is being successful at this is really simple. You make 10 new calls every day to 10 new people. That's it. That's the secret. If you do that, you're going to be very successful financially. You'll be able to do this the rest of your life, and you'll help a lot of people and get to know a lot of wonderful people. And that sounded good, all right? Tomorrow it sounded good. When it got to tomorrow and I was supposed to make those 10 calls, was it easy? No. I'm not sure if I ever made 10 calls in a day. And every time I got there, it would be, well, I'll start that tomorrow. All right? And, of course, sometimes about some things, tomorrow never comes, and I've not been in the insurance business for a long, long, long time. Well, that's why we can't break the habit, okay? Because we're programmed, pre-programmed to live in the present, to live in now, but when it gets to now about something that we either need to quit doing or start doing, because we shift to I'll do it tomorrow instead of now. Why do we do that? We do it because of pain. All right? If you're if you came pre-programmed with your software to do things, to focus on and do things tomorrow, then it would be easy. When tomorrow got here to make those 10 calls, it'd be easy when tomorrow becomes today to not have that Dr. Pepper today, all right, if we were programmed for tomorrow. But we're not. We're programmed for today, all right? We have trouble when tomorrow becomes today. Even though we're programmed for today, the now, the present, the reason when it is now in the present today, we have trouble with it and tend to delay till tomorrow or, like Hope, live in the past because of pain and wrong goals that never should have been goals in the first place. And this really isn't the time to talk about that. I've talked about that so much. That's in my book, The Love Code. But kind of the short version is whenever you have an expectation for tomorrow, I will quit Dr. Pepper tomorrow, it puts me into chronic stress today. When I say I will make those 10 calls tomorrow and expect myself to do that, it puts me into immediate chronic stress today. And then I wake up in the morning and think, oh boy, it's not tomorrow anymore, it's today, and I'm supposed to quit Dr. Pepper, and I'm supposed to make those 10 calls, and my stress is already spiked because of that expectation. Well, what does that do? It dumbs me down, drains my energy, causes me to come at everything from a negative perspective, meaning I can't get off Dr. Pepper today. I can't make those 10 calls today. That's the negative perspective. Changes the physiology of my body to fight or flight, et cetera. So I'm trying to change my life and live in the present in chronic stress because of my expectations, wrong goals, and pain related to those. What's the pain? The pain of of withdrawing pleasure, which would be the great tasting icy Dr. Pepper that I've had in the freezer for an hour, or the pain of making a sales call to a friend of mine and being a little bit embarrassed about that, and then having them reject me. And so I picture the rejection with my prefrontal cortex, my experience simulator, and I feel the rejection when I've not even made the call, which makes me not make the call. All right? So we don't live in the present because of pain and wrong goals associated with the past and the future. For Hope, the past. For me, the future. What is it for you? Okay? And then when I have the pain related to the expectations, and I'm either a captive of the past or future, what is my response to that pain in the now, in the present? I want to make a plan. A plan for what? A plan to get the pleasure. If it's not a Dr. Pepper, something else. That's why usually when people break one habit or addiction, they develop a new one or even two or three to take its place. So when that pleasure is withdrawn from me, I naturally want to make a plan to get pleasure to take its place, or a plan to make the pain go away, not having to make these calls anymore, so I'll quit selling insurance, which I probably shouldn't have at the time, when really nothing wrong with selling insurance. I should have just done it from the heart in truth and love, the way, not the way I was doing it, okay? Well, what is the planning? It's almost always a wrong goal that is expectation-based, which just increases my stress even more. So I can't do what I want to do because of the chronic stress from a wrong goal and pain, and then my response to that is more expectation, which increases my stress even more. And I get into this vicious cycle, and all of a sudden I wake up 10 years later and say, what the heck was that all about? I not totally, but in some ways maybe wasted those years or that year or those months or however long you've been doing it. The planning should not be for pain. Your planning should be for what is right, what is best, what is love-based in the present moment. It's okay to plan as long as it's a right goal, not a wrong goal. And you need to read the love code for that. But it's basically, okay, you give up the end result that you're not in control of anyway to God or to love. I give that up. That's not my gig. A lot of things could keep that from happening. I may die in a car wreck today. They may not be home tomorrow. They may take Dr. Pepper off all the shelves. Whatever. That's not my job. My job is to do what I believe is right and best and love-based in the present moment, walking toward my desires that are love-based, and then whatever happens from that is not my job. But what does happen from that, and I've seen it in person after person who successfully do this, is they get better results than they'd ever dreamed or ever been able to do. Why? Because they're doing it now out of love, and it's easy, rather than pushing against all that stress, trying to force themselves to do something they don't want to do. Okay, so this week, are you living more in the past, present, or future overall? And then I would take a look at the different roles of your life, with my marriage, with my partner, with my children, with my job, with myself, me and God, my hobbies. Take a look at every role. Am I more in the past, present, or future? What is the past influencing me to not do what is right and best and love-based in the present moment, day in, day out, hour in, hour out. You never do it perfectly, but better and better all the time. Okay, that's cool. Or is my present being stolen by the past or the future? If it is, you need to heal some stuff in your past that is causing you to focus on the future or causing you to focus on the past rather than the present. And you need to change your wrong goals to right goals, and you need to quit running away from pain and realize that there's two kinds of pain, pain with meaning and pain with no meaning, and to walk the path of pain with meaning, which is the path of what is right and best in the present moment and love-based. So take a little inventory of yourself. And I would do Trilogy to heal the source of this. You can use one of our tests to diagnostically kind of pin down which of these are most happening with you, okay, and to know what to work on. And then the love code is, once you're healed, how you start living your life to live as close to the perfect life for you as possible, which is always in the present, in love and joy and peace. And there's nothing like it. You will never go back. But most people never experience it on a continuing basis. Start this week. Don't let another week go by having your present robbed from you. It's the only place you can be happy. Thank you, Johanna.
All right, so that was a wonderful topic that Alex shared a while back. And since we still have quite a bit of time, I want to play another one, another replay. And this one is called When It Is Hard to Love. So again, here comes Alex.
Welcome, welcome. We're so honored every single week by your presence. The law of nature for today, you know, we talk about love a lot on this program, and rightly so. If you're going to talk about living a successful spiritual life, there's really no way to do that without talking about love and truth and light a lot, and their opposites, fear and falsehood and darkness. Those are sort of the ingredients that either go into success or failure, happiness, unhappiness, health or health problems. But, you know, sometimes, man, it is so hard to love. It really is, because of many factors. But I'll give you some examples to start off with, and then we'll try to talk about this from several different angles, because I hope today's message is going to be an encouragement to you, maybe especially when it's hard to love, for that to be your favorite time to love. You know, we have this thing about us, or a lot of us do, or it's kind of part of how we come into the world, that we like to do things the easiest way or an easy way. If we had a choice, an easy way or a hard way, we like the easy way. And I'm not saying there's necessarily anything wrong with that all of the time, but there is some of the time. And this is, of course, tied to our basic survival mechanism to seek pleasure and avoid pain. And so pleasure is pleasure feels good, pain feels bad. So we say, okay, if it's painful, it's bad. If it's pleasurable, it's good, which is, of course, not always true. But then we kind of get a post-it note attached to that, which says, okay, if it's easy, it's good, and if it's hard, it's bad. okay? And this is one that I was especially guilty of. If I'd been growing up today, I would have been diagnosed with every learning disability known to man, probably. They didn't talk about those things when I was growing up. But that's one of the reasons that I flunked kindergarten and third grade, flunked two grades, and then after that, barely by the skin of my teeth, and sometimes I'm sure I didn't even get by. They just sort of passed me anyway so that, you know, I wouldn't be humiliated. Just sort of got by every other grade after that, including college, until I got to graduate school. Graduate school was a different deal because it's something I was really passionate about, and it was after life had beat on me for a few years, and I was searching for a cure to Hope's depression. So there were several reasons why I did do real well in graduate school. But before that, man, school was my Darth Vader. You know, if I was Luke Skywalker, school was like my enemy. It was horrible, and everything was a terrible struggle until I got through graduate school. So I certainly had the thing, if it's easy, it's good. If it's hard, it's bad. And if it was hard, man, sometimes I would just throw my hands up and hardly even try. Well, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes the hardest thing in a given situation you can ever do almost is to act in love. Because of yourself, because of the person you're trying to love, that very well may not be very lovable. When I married Hope, dated her, fell in love with her really before we ever even went out on a date, and then dated her, married her, and then the first year or so of our marriage was, you know, really wonderful. And then the depression hit, and then it was an absolute nightmare. And let me tell you, she today, and I've said this for years, and it's the truth, I'm not exaggerating at all, she is the most wonderful woman I've ever met in my life, heart, spirit, soul, mind. Just as good, she is good to the core, which I'm absolutely not, okay? But having said that, because of the depression and especially the anger that came with the depression after a little while, and the majority of that anger being directed at me for literally years, Hope was, loving Hope was not always easy when she was angry at me, and it really wasn't about her or me, it was more about the depression, okay? And during our first 2.5 years of marriage, for her to love me, and there was some of that time when she wasn't depressed, probably about a year, her loving me was anything but easy. I was a spoiled brat. I was the baby of my family. My mom had some issues of her own that caused her to want to be a caretaker and to want to take care of everything for everybody. So when we got married, I didn't know how to wash clothes. I didn't know how to balance a checkbook. I didn't know how to do much of anything. I think my mom was just kind of glad that I survived and somehow did get through school to be an adult. And all the other stuff, she just, you know, it was easier for her just to take care of it. Plus, she kind of had a need for that. So when we got married, man, I was, some of it was selfish, and some of it was just the way I was raised and programmed. But I didn't do much of anything to help Hope in our family, okay? And so putting myself in her position and from where she came from, and especially once she was depressed, loving me was no bargain, man. That was tough stuff, not easy to love, okay? And I do completely agree that, you know, once you are transformed in your own heart, then things that used to be hard are not nearly as hard anymore. And I've used the example, and I did in my recent book, about, you know, hating the clean toilets. It was my least favorite thing in the world, and I despised it, was in agony if I had to do it, might even get a headache and start feeling sick or something. And after that transformational aha between myself and God, I found myself, not even realizing it, cleaning toilets, singing and humming spontaneously, actually having a good time cleaning toilets, something that was very difficult for me before. But even considering that, even if you've been transformed by a transformational aha, or you've healed those issues of the heart and kind of done it manually with the tools, it is not always easy to love, okay? And one of the biggest ones here is loving yourself, okay? For a lot of people, loving yourself is the hardest person to love. And many people never get there with themselves. But please listen to this next statement today. If you have a situation now or do in the future where taking the path of love is hard and difficult, all right? Here it is. The harder it is to love, the more honor there is in loving. The harder it is to love, the more honor there is in loving. Now, honor is an interesting word to me. If you look it up in the dictionary or a number of dictionaries as I have, outside of like receiving an honor, what it basically means, according to most dictionaries, is doing it right regardless of the circumstances. Now, what I would say from a spiritual laws of nature perspective is tagging, you know, kind of connecting to that definition, doing it right regardless of the circumstances. I would say the only way you can do it right regardless of the circumstances is to do it in truth and love regardless of the circumstances. And I can't just leave truth and love at truth and love, because those means different things to different people. So I'm going to define truth as the whole truth, which is really what the word integrity means, not just truth from one angle, but when you look at it from every possible angle, the whole truth, and not just any kind of love, because what most people mean when they say love is what's in it for me business deal love, and to me that's really the opposite of love. That's really selfishness. So for love, I have to say de facto love. And the word de facto, which we've turned into kind of a legal term, means the reality, whether you like it or not, whether it's what you think it ought to be or not, whether it's what you want it to be or not, but the reality. So real love, the reality love, whether it's what you bargain for or like or think it should be or not, the real love. So then putting that together, it's truth to the degree of integrity. It's love to the degree of de facto love. And acting in that integrity and de facto love, regardless of the circumstances or the outcome. And what I would say today, and I don't have any idea what the percentages would be, but a very significant percentage of people do not love in that kind of love. They do not live in honor of that kind of love. They live in, you know what, I'll love if it's easy, but if it's not kind of easy, or maybe I won't use the word easy, if it starts getting hard and painful, then I may choose a partial truth, meaning I can rationalize or justify that it's the truth from an angle, not all angles, but an angle that fits my argument. And I will love, but when, if you really look at it too close, you're going to discover that it's what's in it for me, business deal love, not de facto love. Okay? But when you do love that way, in integrity and de facto love, there is great, great honor in it. All right, and let's talk about honor for just a moment. When you fail to honor that which should be honored, you diminish yourself. Let me say that again. When you fail to honor that which should be honored, you diminish yourself. When Tracy was depressed, and she, because of the depression, was angry at me, sometimes furious and enraged, even if I had not done anything wrong, that is, I still knew in my heart, without any doubt, the kind of person that she was, way down deep inside. And I guarantee you, I thought about, you know, let's just get a divorce and start over. This is too hard. This is too painful. All right? But when I prayed about it, I could not do that because I knew the kind of person she was and that depression was not her. It was in her, but not her. And it would have been dishonoring to do that. It would have been dishonoring to treat her back with anger when she was angry at me. It would have been dishonoring because I didn't have that depression in me. So I could treat her with love, even though she at times treated me with great anger that hurt like heck and that made treating her in love very difficult or very difficult at times. And she could say the same thing about me. Back when I was extremely selfish and living by what's in it for me, love, and not living in integrity, but with one angle of truth that fitted my what I really wanted to do anyway, but was not being in integrity. Okay. Okay, let's go to the next step. When you dishonor that which should be honored, your internal light grows a shade dimmer. So the first one was when you fail to honor that which should be honored, you diminish yourself. Well, how do you diminish yourself? Because when you dishonor that which should be honored, your internal light grows a shade dimmer. When your internal light grows dimmer, your happiness and peace start to reverse course. Honor is acting in love and truth regardless of your circumstances or the results. Dishonor is acting in selfishness, fear, falsehood, regardless of what you know love and truth to be. That is dishonoring to that person, to that thing, to God, and to yourself. Also, on the other side of the coin, when we honor that which should be dishonored, it is dishonorable. Now, I know that gets kind of twisty in our mind. When we honor that which should be dishonored, we also diminish ourselves because we've just participated in something that's dishonorable. So how do we do that? Do you honor pornography, which for the last 10 to 15 years has really become an epidemic, especially among men, and statistics say it's much higher among women than anyone ever thought. Do you honor drugs, prescription drugs, or illicit drugs? Do you honor anger? Do you honor fear and falsehood? Do you honor acting out of integrity rather than in integrity? Do you honor being lazy and not working the way everyone should? If we don't work, we shouldn't eat, unless there's some disability or reason for that. Do you honor instant gratification rather than delayed gratification? Do you honor what's in it for me business deal love rather than real love? Well, when you honor that which should be dishonored, you also diminish yourself. Okay, so let's look at both of those. When you fail to honor that which should be honored, you diminish yourself. And when you honor that which should be dishonored, you diminish yourself. And in both cases, your internal light dims. Every cell of your body works on light and energy. You have, as Dr. Ben would say, a Delco generator in every cell, at least probably 100 years ago, on farms where there was not electricity, they would have a Delco generator, and they would fill that thing up to power things at the home and on the farm that needed to be powered, or if there was not electricity to that part of the farm or whatever. Well, in your cell, your Delco generator is your mitochondria. And as the mitochondria goes, the cell goes. If the mitochondria has plenty of energy and light, the cell literally, according to Dr. Bruce Lipton, is impervious to illness and disease. It can't get sick. It's impossible. On the other hand, if your mitochondria does not have enough energy because the cell has closed because of stress and fear, and so the ions cannot get into the cell that power the mitochondria. If your mitochondria does not have enough energy, then the cell becomes toxic, and the odds go through the roof that a disease gene will manifest that never would have manifested any other way. So when your internal light diminishes because you are honoring that which should be honored, and you are dishonoring, I'm sorry, I may have said that wrong. Your internal light diminishes because you are not honoring that which should be honored, and or you are dishonoring that which should... I think I did it again. I'm sorry. Let me take one last stab at this. Your internal light diminishes when you are honoring that which should be honored or dishonoring that which should be honored. And when that internal light diminishes, your mitochondrias in every cell have a little bit less energy for that cell, and the odds have just gone up a little bit that the disease gene will manifest. But it's way more than that. It's all the other things stress does too. You're dumbed down, energy drained, coming from a negative perspective, so it affects relationships, success and failure, everything. Okay? Then later that day or the next day, you dishonor something else that should be honored. You yell at someone rather than acting in love. You present one angle of the truth that suits your argument instead of the whole truth from integrity, and your light dims a little bit more, including every single cell, brain cells, liver cells, kidney cells, pancreas cells, etc. Later that day or the next day, you honor something that should be dishonored. You look at pornography on the internet, or you take drugs to numb the pain rather than dealing with the issue, or you see someone that is in need of something that you could help with, but you don't, out of what's in it for me, selfishness, and again, your light dims a little bit more. Until 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, you are sick, you are tired, you are dumbed down. You are coming at everything from a negative perspective, even if you paint on a happy face for social acceptability or so you don't lose your job, but inside you're dying and you feel like you are failing at your life and you wonder, how did I get here and what in the world can I do? And maybe it all started and progressed because you've been honoring what should be dishonored, and you've been dishonoring what should be honored on a daily basis, just a little bit at a time, and it never seemed like that huge a deal. But ladies and gentlemen, it is, because that's what's at the heart of love versus fear. At the heart of love is honor. At the heart of fear is dishonor. If you don't believe that, ask some people who have been in the military and have had their life on the line day in and day out for you and for me. And they feel like what got them through it and the thing that they still live by is that word honor. And I'm not saying in every military situation that's the case. I know it's not. But in a lot of the heroic type situations, honor is what carried the day. Honor is what gave a country freedom. Honor is what freed a prisoner of war for many years from bondage, etc. Because other people, not coming at it from what's in it for me, but coming at it for what's in it for the country, what's in it for this other person who I've got their back and they've got mine. And so I will put my life, what I want, on the line for someone else, for something greater than myself. Well, it's one thing to do that in battle or war or in a life-threatening situation. It's another thing to do it day in, day out, little decision by little decision over months, years, and decades. So this week, what I would encourage you to do is to think and pray about, what am I honoring in my life and what am I dishonoring in my life? And is it making my internal light brighter, or is it causing my internal light to diminish?
All right. Well, wow, that was great. Two wonderful, wonderful spiritual laws of nature that Alex has shared in the past, and I'm so glad to be able to share them with you today. We're going to go ahead and end the call now, and I want to encourage you to come back next week when Alex will be back, hopefully. Thank you all for your prayers and thoughts for him right now as he ministers to the different families that have experienced loss this week. And we know all that Alex is and everything he's about is going to be a real blessing to them. So thank you again for being here, and God bless you and continue to make you a blessing.